Hey, Mr. One Stop. I'm looking for a record and it goes like this. Dun 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 dun.
Welcome to Addicted to the Needle,
the podcast where a vinyl addict meets his dealer. I'm your dealer, Ben Shulman.
And I'm Patrick Foisy, the addict.
And here we are on a nice, crisp Montreal cool night. We got our first little dusting of snow. We got to watch out for the black ice on the sidewalks already. It's like, I feel like we went from nice, acceptable weather to, oh shit, it's our 5 to 6 months of, you know.
Well, first of all, I should wish you a happy Hanukkah.
Oh, hey, nice. Patrick, my Jewish friend here. Thank you. It's the third night of Hanukkah. Taryn and I lit our candles right before I headed out to come here. We had some latkes the other night that her mother made. Her mother makes the best latkes. You know, in retrospect, I wish I would have had some to bring to you, but they were all eaten. I'm sorry.
Homemade. Oh, homemade. What would I give? On the third day of Hanukkah, my true love gave to me 3 potato latkes,
2 spinning dreidels,
1 golden coin.
Yeah, we love golden coins in the Jewish community.
Is it a golden chocolate coin?
It's called Hanukkah Geld.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know what? Obviously, I hope Marty's listening to this. I'll extend a nice happy Hanukkah to our friend Maude Marty out there in Winnipeg.
Well, you know how much I like to tease our friend Maude Marty.
I know you like to tease Maude Marty. That's you're a teaser and a pleaser.
Well, I here's the thing. I'm not sure he's listening to our podcast anymore. And here's the reason why. What he led me to believe is that he's jealous of the records I get from you, so he's pissed off.
Aw, come on. You know, and it's funny, and I get Discogs orders from Marty, like, all the time. Well, not all the time, but Marty does. Like, he recently bought a good Leslie Gore off me, and in retrospect, I think, shit, I should have sold that to Pat on the show. But hey, look, Marty, if you are listening, you did end up with that, and I, for some reason, never featured it for Pat. I will get you a copy at some point. But there's no need to be jealous. I always hook Marty up too.
Well, I'm gonna make sure he listens.
And again with Marty, you know, I see, you know, he posts, you know, maybe 2 or 3 times a week, you know, a 45 that he features on his show. And
let's plug
Marty. Marty gets really good stuff. Yeah, let's plug Marty a little bit.
Yeah, on target.
What's in the groove that counts, which is the slogan for Gordy Records, subsidiary of Motown back in the day, that Marty lifted, which you know, got all the respect for in the world. And also, just quickly, while I mentioned the word Gordy, let's throw in a happy birthday to Barry Gordy. It was his 92nd birthday the other day, Mr. Barry Gordy, who you know, he's like a prophet to me. So.
So, yeah, it's Hanukkah, prophets, and
Hanukkah, Barry Gordy's birthday.
And let's raise a glass to one of your idols for sure. So, on the last show, if you haven't listened to the last show,
you should, because it's like it was one of my favorite episodes ever.
Episode 74. So, this is episode 75. I don't know if it's a milestone.
Wow. It's a bit of a milestone. I mean, that means that they're out there on the internet. There's at least 75 hours of us doing this, which is pretty impressive. I feel like we've been a little repetitive over the years, but you know what? If you've made it this far and you like listening to Pat and I do this, all the thanks in the world, because we love doing this show. We love listening to records. It's, you know, right before we started recording, I'm like, we were talking about COVID. I'm like, okay, enough. We need to listen to records. Talk about records. Enough.
And if you still bear the food dispensers going off while we record every time.
Pat always likes to serve me cat food and dog food when I arrive. It's a bit of a tradition that we have. I am part feline, I suppose.
But since it's Gordy's, Barry Gordy's birthday, and I'm going to reference our last episode we had with the Gruesomes.
You mean the Kennedys? I'm kidding. Bobby and Johnny.
Bobby and Johnny from the Gruesomes. They teased me for the entire show because I wasn't expecting to...
Pat, you had musicians over. Musicians like to drink. And Pat, I think...
And the thing is, I had more beer in the fridge, and I it was in the back. I couldn't see it. Anyway, so this is...
usually you and I will split a beer, and here we are, four guys splitting a beer, and I get to see like the look on John's face, and he's just like... What? He's like, I would drink five beers before we even start the show. So anyway.
And it's not because I'm the cheap type. I'm not.
You most definitely are not.
And here's how this last episode has plagued me. So I read the story, and I'm going to tell you about the story. This is the...
Please, before you tell the story, can you crack a beer?
Here's the thing.
With you, it's always there's always something that leads to something.
Okay, let's have the sound.
And this beer is dedicated to...
Oh, damn.
Oh, God. What a putz. Let me go grab some... want me to get some paper towel?
Yeah.
Live on air.
Pat, where is it? Isn't it usually right here? It's okay. Keep recording.
Grab the towel there. Yep.
In my language, we call this a schmutter.
Jeez. Oh, no. It's going on my Motown.
All right.
Nice Motown.
All right. So, Pat. All right.
Jeez.
Live. No editing here. What did you shake it?
No.
Shaken. Not stirred. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Here.
All right. So, yeah, serve yourself while I mop up everything.
Why don't you mop up and tell the story?
And Lick is licking the beer off.
Great.
Lick's
drunk now.
Off the floor. All right, so I'm going to pick up the mic here to mop up my beautiful Motown book here where I rest the mic on.
Yeah, we're very professional. I rest my microphone on the beautiful Philly Soul book by Dave Moore and our buddy Jason Thornton.
Shout out, Jason.
Shout out, Jason. I miss our American friends.
I sure do.
Yeah, Ty and John Funky, Ty Gesso, all the crew down in Boston, Stacy and
Al.
Jason.
Hey, Al.
You know what? It's amazing. I never met Al, but I feel like I would have the best time in the world with that guy. Because Al, if you're listening to this, and I assume you are, when we could get down to New York City eventually, I want to eat a lot of different hot dogs with you. I've never, you know, I've been to New York City so many times, and I've never been to that, Gray's Papaya? Gray Papaya, it's like a famous hot dog joint, New York City. Never been. Al, you're listening. Take me for some hot dogs.
Hook us up.
What do you want me to do? All right.
So,
Pat spilled.
Is there beer left?
Yeah, the can's right by you. Here, behind your little... Right. Very professional here at Addicted to the Needle, folks.
So,
I'm sorry. I would wait to cheers you, but I'm already had a sip.
So
I'm like,
what are we having here? It's a night.
It's delicious.
A night Marzen.
It's like a red or something.
It's a red.
It's very good.
It's from Bose. Bose is
It's right near my place, Van Cleek Hill,
out of Ontario, right?
Van Cleek Hill, Ontario. Yeah, it's like a 20. Yeah, it was about half. You know, I've never been to Bose. My brother and my sister-in-law love going there.
Let's have a taste,
and we'll have an after cheers. And it's funny, I'm not even like the biggest beer drinker, but I like sipping on something when we're doing the show. So cheers, and this beer is in honor of the Gruesomes, and Barry Gordy, we love you, 92 years old.
So my initial... idea was to surprise you.
You love surprising me.
Absolutely. We've never really drank hard liquor on this show.
I don't think we ever have.
And I don't know how much of a connoisseur or you are. I'm a cocktail guy.
You're a cocktail guy, and I'm the kind of guy who drinks wine from the Dépanneur. So, for our out of town listeners, the Dépanneur is the
a bodega
convenience store. Or if you live in Michigan,
7-Eleven.
I love it. In Michigan, they call them party stores. I learned
did
that.
Really?
Yeah, I learned that from Brad. Shout out Brad from People's Records in Detroit. I went out for dinner with him one night, and we wanted to go grab some beers. And he's like, "Oh, we'll stop at a party store because in Michigan you can buy a bottle of vodka like at the gas station."
Of course.
Yeah, ugh, America, land
yeah,
of the free.
Yeah, no, we have to go to the liquor store.
Yeah, but and it's funny, and I was actually thinking about that because you have a couple of signature cocktails up your sleeve, and I don't think we've ever had one on the show. Nope. I mean, I've had cocktails with you. I always think about, remember Mod Club was happening at that kind of cool upstairs.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a tiki. Well, it wasn't tiki, but it was like.
It was a burlesque bar.
It felt like a speakeasy a little bit. Because the guy, I remember the bartender had like a funky mustache.
Yeah, it was a burlesque bar.
Yeah. That was kind of a fun place, but we were.
Yeah, I had
long.
The Mod Club there for about.
Yeah, I remember
six
spinning there
a
couple of times. I remember this. Our setup was very tight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow.
We've never had hard liquor, but I tried really hard to get us some whiskey.
Ooh.
And here's why, and here's the story behind it.
I'm ready.
Everybody knows on the planet the name Jack Daniels.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
What is the one thing that we try to celebrate almost on every show here?
One thing
we like to honor.
The first thing that comes to my head would be African American music.
Right.
Yeah.
So here's something not a lot of people know, and I've learned since the last show.
Okay.
That the person behind the Jack Daniels recipe was a black enslaved man.
Huh.
The first master distiller?
Yeah, distiller, yeah.
Was a black man. Hmm. He's the one who taught Jack Daniels the recipe.
Wow, white people stealing things from black people.
Never heard
of that happening.
You know what? The Jack Daniels family never hid that fact.
Hey.
They got a lot of flack when it was known, but it was never something hidden. So we shouldn't, you know, throw rocks at Jack Daniels because it's always been part of their history, and they've never denied it.
And it's amazing. They've been around obviously since before 1865. Like, I can't tell you,
but the thing is, they've never denied it. They never hid it, but it was never a known fact. So, the master distiller was a gentleman known by Nearest Green. Nathan Nearest Green.
Okay. Nathan Green. God, he almost sounds.
And he's the one.
He almost sounds Jewish. Like a little. Like.
So he's the one who mentored Jack Daniels.
Wow.
And here's
Green was the name of the enslaved.
Black man, yeah.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood that. Oh, well, anyway, Nathan Green is still a very Jewish sounding name, but okay, wow. Didn't know.
So here's a part of the story that's interesting. In 2016, a journalist, her name was Fawn Weaver.
Okay.
She went to Tennessee to interview Nearest Green's descendants.
Okay.
For a book project.
And they're still living in Tennessee?
I believe so. Oh. Yeah, and I think on the same land or near the Jack Daniels distillery.
Yeah, I wonder where exactly. Well, anyway, somewhere down there in Tennessee.
And her, Fawn Weaver, she's African-American, and she wanted to tell the story of Nearest Green.
Hmm.
And she fell in love with the story, with Tennessee. And long story short, she became the first African-American woman to own her own whiskey distillery.
Huh.
And she named it...
So this is the great granddaughter, great great granddaughter of
no. She's the journalist.
Okay, this is the journalist. Okay, so the journalist
decided
to become a distiller of whiskey.
Of whiskey.
Oh, okay, that's very cool.
And his nickname, the master distiller, was Uncle Nearest. That was his nickname.
Cool.
And she asked permission from Jack Daniels and the family if she could start a whiskey brand called Uncle Nearest.
In tribute to this guy who is essentially responsible for developing their recipe.
Right.
Wow,
and
cool.
At the same time, she became the first African-American woman to head a major spirits brand.
Hey.
And also the first American spirit brand with an all-female executive team.
Yeah, love it.
Now, here's, and so I wanted to
build up.
I wanted to have a bottle of Uncle Nearest premium whiskey so we can toast on the show. It's not available in Quebec.
Okay.
I think you can buy it at certain places in Ontario.
Okay.
It's still a small company. It's still...
You can't get it. Can you buy alcohol online? How does that work?
I think it's complicated, especially if you have
coming across like across an international border. Right.
Right. Now, Fawn Weaver, that's her married name.
Okay.
Her...
maiden name?
Maiden name is Fawn Wilson.
Okay.
She's the daughter.
Oh, no way. Of?
Frank Wilson. Of Motown.
Whoa.
The infamous, you know...
Do I Love You? Indeed I Do. Soul yeah. Records number 35019. Unreleased 1965. Ladies and gentlemen, the best Northern Soul record of all time. Underneath, I lay my heart down at your feet. Do I love you? All you have to do is ask, I'll give them till there's nothing left. Now, do I love you? As long as there is life in me, your happiness is guaranteed. I feel your heart with ecstasy forever, darling. Do I love you? Come on now. Do I love you? Yeah, yeah. Do I love you?
The rarest and the most sought after, most expensive records ever sold or changed hands for some ridiculous amount of money.
I thought you were going to say Mary Wilson, you know, from the Supremes. But Frank Wilson, yeah. That's...
So she's the daughter of Frank Wilson.
Okay, so now
of Motown.
Now we really need to get our hands on this.
So was the build-up worth it, at least?
Oh, yeah. I was just so not expecting that.
But I was so... I wanted so much
so
to
here's,
just
so,
give you a glass
so here's
and
the,
go.
Here's the mission. Here's what we're going to do. Because I go into Ontario fairly often, and plus I live way closer to Ontario than you do. Let's try and find like a liquor commission in Ontario, you know, maybe in Ottawa or something that has it, and I'll get a bottle, and we'll toast on our Christmas. We'll do a Christmas episode in a couple weeks, and we'll toast on it.
Well, I've looked online. So it's we can get it. I mean, it's not...
I mean, if it's
a premium brand, so it's a bit more expensive than your basic Jack Daniels.
It's the holidays.
And I'll split half.
Sure. And that'd be fun. And to be honest, I'm not a whiskey drinker.
Me neither.
But if you could form some kind of funky cocktail out of it.
Oh, I will.
Yeah.
Well, I think it probably, if it's a premium whiskey, you'd want to
try it. Yeah, you want to, like, on the rocks or something. It's funny because, like, my friends, like, growing up, my buddies love doing, like, shots of, like, Jameson and Jack Daniels and stuff. And, like, I personally find, like, when it comes to harder liquor, I'm a gin guy. Gin, and then, like, everything else I can kind of take or leave. I like gin. But, like, whiskey or scotch, like, I've always found it kind of, it's never really been
mine. It's an acquired taste. I'm more of a cocktails
Me
type
too.
Of guy. So,
I'm a cocktail,
mixed.
Yeah, it's like Taryn and I go to a nice restaurant, like we went to Joe Beef a couple of weeks ago for our 10-year anniversary. It's like, yeah, we got, like, I love, like, a good fancy cocktail, or very much just a straight gin and tonic.
And just to give our listeners a little background about Joe Beef, it's, you know, it's about a 5 minutes walk from my place.
You can almost see it from here.
And it's probably the most well-known
restaurant
in Quebec, I guess.
I think
does it have a Michelin star?
Not sure.
Or a couple?
Probably. Anthony Bourdain liked going there. Put it that way. He's very good friends with the guys who...
And just to give you an idea, just before Obama left office, he came to Montreal.
Oh, didn't he eat there with...
And he had supper there
with Trudeau. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's hard to get a table at, and it's consistently voted, like, one of the best restaurants, not even in Montreal, not even in Quebec, like, in the country.
Yeah.
Like, and it's... It was out of this world.
And how many tables is there? Like five?
It's like no. It is small. That's what I liked about it. It is the most unpretentious. Like, it's not what you would think of as, like, a fancy restaurant. It's a very comfortable. Like, you could walk in there. Like, there were people sitting in there, like, in, like, a hoodie and a hat. Like what I'm, like, you know, very, very relaxed environment. No, it's probably no more than 40 tables. Anyhow,
yeah, it's,
we're doing
it's
that
small.
Thing where we're talking about food and
so let's just have a toast with our beer to Uncle Nearest, the first African American master distiller, the mentor to Jack Daniels.
And I mean, come on, it's Frank Wilson's daughter. Frank Wilson, come on, man, that's Motown royalty there. You know, we can't just briefly gloss over "Do I Love You."
I'm probably gonna.
But Frank Wilson,
playing in the background.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, Frank Wilson, you know, he was just, you know, talk about songwriter, arranger, you know, just like the amount of work he did at Motown, working with the Temptations and Brenda Holloway and everybody, you know, it's just like another just legendary figure. I believe he passed away some point in the past decade or so. Unfortunately, he was someone I never ended up getting in touch with. But we were talking about Berry Gordy briefly before, and that just kind of reminded me, and I don't think, did I tell the story on the show at all about how I tried to get in touch with Berry Gordy recently?
No.
Oh, this is a good one. Everybody gather around. So, as our listeners probably have figured out at this point, I'm kind of obsessed with Motown. And, you know, obviously one of our greatest episodes on the show is when I told the whole story of how Taryn and I got to meet Smokey Robinson in Detroit. And
I had chills listening to that
every
story.
Time. You know what's funny? I kind of realize what a good storyteller I am, because, like, I tell people that story and I often see, like, a little tear in their eye, and I'm like, wow, I can really relay the fact that I'm very passionate about Motown. And obviously getting to meet Smokey and talk to him was just mind blowing. But obviously, you know, with Berry Gordy, who's now coming up on 92 years old, it's like, I've always wanted to talk to Berry Gordy. So what I did was, I was in a mood a couple of months ago. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try and figure out a way to get in touch with him. So I found the woman who runs like the Berry Gordy Foundation, you know, just some charity operates. If I'm not mistaken, it's like to raise money for schools for African-American kids. I'm just like, perfect. So I leave a message and I go, hi, I know this is going to sound a bit strange, but how much money would I have to donate to get on the phone with Berry Gordy? And I got a call back, and like, I didn't think they would take me seriously at all. And then like, someone called me back and said, I'm going to pass along your information to someone else and this and that. And like, I was just trying to make it seem like, oh, I'm just some Canadian millionaire who just really, you know, I have $7 in my bank account. But yeah, so I tried. I tried that route. Failed. I never heard back again.
Oh, they didn't give you a quote?
Yeah. Well, it's well, you know what's crazy? It's like, you know, it's kind of a back-ass way of doing it, but I mean, man, I would love to talk to the guy. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll try another scheme at some point.
It's funny you say that, because what's that site where you can pay a celebrity?
Cameo?
Cameo. Or,
yeah.
So I went
Smokey's on it.
I went on Cameo, and I wanted to surprise you with a message. We were going to play on the show. You know, I'd rather give the money straight to you, because I think
who are you going to try and get? Smokey Robinson?
I don't remember if I saw him in Cameo, but it was probably one of the Temptations.
Otis Williams is up there from the Temps. Yeah,
yeah, I think that was the one. He was reasonable, but you know.
Yeah.
I'd rather give you the money and
you know
get
what?
A record in return.
Not to do my own horn, but I've already met Otis Williams and Smokey Robinson. See? So anyhow, lots of chatter.
So
why don't we get into some tunes?
Well, we're going to switch gears here, because before you whip out a record.
Potential sale.
I'm going to tell you about the second and third concert I went post-COVID.
You sure we don't want to do a record before this? I feel like we're doing... Okay. Okay.
Trust me.
I'm trusting you.
So, the first concert I went to see post-COVID was a concert a little small affair where I DJed was a local ska band, the Skatton Club. So that was my first concert post-COVID.
Must have been fun.
It was great.
Where was that at?
It was at on Saint Denis.
Okay.
But a couple of weeks ago, I went to two concerts. So I'm going to talk to you about the last one I went to see, less than a week ago.
Yeah, I think I saw something on Facebook. It was like a string group or something.
It was
like
a string quartet.
Okay.
And it's a special series of concert, and they're in churches, and they're all candlelit concerts. Ooh. No artificial lights. Only
are they mic'd up, or are they just playing straight?
No,
wow,
they're not mic'd up.
So you just
up.
Have to be like ultra quiet,
a cappella.
That's cool.
Well, not a cappella because they're not singing.
But not
unplugged.
Acoustic unplugged, using the acoustics of the room to.
And in churches, I mean, the
of course
acoustics
that's what
are,
it's
perfect.
I've seen a concert in a church before, and it was the best sound ever.
So the last concert I went to see was in Basilique Bon Secours, which is in Old Montreal, one of the oldest churches in Canada.
17th century.
1771.
Was that when it was built?
Well,
version that existed, because I mean, it existed in.
Before,
I mean, it existed, I think, way back in the 1660s.
And it
but
burnt
I think,
down.
Yes, that's right.
And they rebuilt it over.
Yep,
and
yep.
The reason why I have a personal affection for the Chapelle Bon Secours is because it was the congregation was Marguerite Bourgeois,
mm-hmm.
and Marguerite Bourgeois was the first teacher. In the colonies.
In Nouvelle-France.
So, the first teacher in North America, basically.
Yeah, oh, 100%. She was a nun.
She was.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a school board called Marguerite Bourgeois now. And plenty of
oh my God,
plenty
her name,
of,
oh God,
of
her
schools
name's
too.
Everywhere. There's street names and bridges. And she's, you know, one of those historical figures in the history of Quebec and Canada. Yeah, of course.
So the concert I went to see was called Back to Beatles. Oh. So they started with a few back opuses.
Okay.
Is that the right term?
I'm no classically trained musician, but probably.
And as we speak, I actually took out my cell phone and I hit it and I recorded the concert live. And this is what we're going to listen to right now as I tell you about it. So this is live. That was live. You might hear people cough every once in a while. Of course, you recognize the song.
Oh, yeah, All You Need Is Love. Took me a second.
It took you longer than I thought.
Yeah. Interesting how the intro to All You Need Is Love is a take on the French national anthem.
Is it?
Yeah. The dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Because this is about halfway through the song. So.
Beautiful, yeah. And so, they're doing it in the correct key, which is G.
I bet you you can hear a pin drop.
I mean, for a cell phone video, it sounds pretty nice, yeah.
And I was in the back.
Do.
I was in the cheap seats. The nosebleed section.
That's like John Lennon's famous thing when they were performing for the Queen in 1963. They're on stage and he goes, "The people in the cheap seats, clap your hands, and everyone else, rattle your jewelry," and then they just go right into Twist and Shout. He's saying this to the Queen of England. Oh, man. Love my Beatles.
Now, what would you think is the song, the best song they did for
the best Beatles
song? A string
song?
Quartet, yeah.
Eleanor Rigby.
There you go.
Oh, come on.
Hey, you read my mind.
Come on. We're talking about... Oh, yes. Wonderful performance. Wonderful performance. Of course. Eleanor Rigby. Arranged on, the string arrangement done by George Martin, their producer. Because, what happened was he had arranged the strings on Yesterday. And then, obviously he'd done George Martin was just such an amazing producer with a background in arranging classical music. And, Paul comes in with Eleanor Rigby and they, here's a rock and roll record that comes out, which is literally just Paul McCartney singing with an orchestra. There's no guitar or bass or drums on that track. And it was a single. And of course it went to number one. So that was kind of a good example of, hey, you don't need it was unorthodox of a rock record, just strings. And, then the B-side was Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, that's true.
That's right.
And just Eleanor Rigby, sort of an enigma. Paul McCartney said it was based on an old woman he knew.
Yeah.
And that has a different name.
And
Eleanor is one name he liked, with Rigby was another thing.
But coincidentally, in this cemetery in Liverpool, where Taryn and I have actually, we were on the Magical Mystery Tour bus in Liverpool doing the Beatles tour, the cemetery kind of right across, if I'm not mistaken, right across the road from where John and Paul met for the first time in 1956, there actually is a tombstone that does say Eleanor Rigby on it, but Paul is he claims it's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
But he must have seen it as a kid or something, and it was
maybe
in there.
Hit a chord.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to switch to the first concert I went to see, part of that candlelit concert series. I was sitting in the church, the first concert and the second concert, and I was thinking, 40 to 50 years ago, you never would have seen this. Remember how John, compared himself to Jesus and how they were burning records.
Oh,
and
then, yeah. Every time I see those clips of them burning those records, I'm like, oh, my God, what are you doing? Come on. you're burning the original Beatles Please Please Me on VJ with the two T's. Anyway. And America.
And I'm sitting in a church.
In a church listening to music that he co-wrote.
So that, but even...
Well, even, in Quebec, where, obviously the separation of church and state, our quiet revolution here in the 1960s, where this is also somewhere where Elvis Presley wasn't allowed to come and perform in the late 1950s. Quebec was very strict For a very long time compared to the rest of Canada and North America. So it is kind of crazy to think, you know, 50 years later, being in a church in Catholic Quebec, listening to music written by Englishmen, Protestant Englishmen. Yeah, so there is something kind of beautiful about that. Yeah,
and I'm going to push it even further. So the previous week, I went to another church in Verdun, and I went to see the Queen's greatest hits.
Okay, I've never really been a big Queen guy, but I know for you, that's more. You know, you grew up with that.
Yeah. And even my father had the LP,
right?
But I never heard it at home though. I think I left with the LP. Mm-hmm. It's in my collection,
right?
But you know, they did all the, you know, the greatest hits.
Yeah. And that's music I can imagine, like, done by an orchestra. It's just, like, incredible. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not the biggest Queen fan, but, I mean, their music is out of this world. I mean, and what's so amazing with Queen, too, is that all four of them wrote songs, all four guys in the band.
So here you have it. Can you recognize the song?
Is it Bohemian Rhapsody? I don't know.
You have it.
Yeah.
So that was the first concert I went to hear, and I was sitting in the church, and that's when it hit me. A gay man who died from AIDS, who sings about the devil.
Yeah.
Beelzebub. And I'm sitting in a church and I'm hearing this song, Bohemian Rhapsody.
That's
where,
right,
they sing about,
yeah,
the devil.
Yeah.
Never you would have imagined 50 years ago.
Well, especially in Quebec, you know, somewhere where the church had such a grasp on the population for a very long time. Yeah, there is something. Again, you know, John Lennon, Freddie Mercury, these eccentric characters who, you know, you have to give, I give a lot of credit to these guys for bringing the world along, you know, kind of maybe opening people's eyes up, you know, just to be cool with everything, you know. But there is something just absolutely beautiful about the fact, you know, Freddie Mercury, who I believe he was from, like, Zanzibar, like, his family's from Zanzibar, they were, like, of Indian descent from East Africa, right, you know, so a minority physically, and a minority, the fact that he's a homosexual man, at a time, you know, the 1970s, they got a little flamboyant then, Bowie, and everybody.
I think it's worth just listening to this last part. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about it. So I think this is going to be a first where...
Oh, we've become a classical show. Patrick Fawzi and I discuss the best of Debussy and...
No, really, it's beautiful. I can't believe how well your phone picked it up. It sounds great.
Right. How beautiful is this?
It's beautiful. You know what? Well, it's always amazing to hear, like, classical arrangements of songs that we know. But lately, I find... I love just kind of putting on a classical music station. It's exceptional music. I mean, if you think about it, this was the first music... This style, you know, classical music was the first music that was popular. You know, if you think about popular music, you know, in the 18th century, it's like 18th and 19th century, it's like this was the first time, you know, like Bach and Beethoven, like they were the rock stars of their era, their talent.
Mozart, too.
Yeah, of course, especially Mozart. That's the one that Amadeus is about, right?
Right.
Yeah. I always find it like.
So you're going to hear me clapping here. You can tell it's live.
Yeah. But yeah, I always... I love, you know, it's hearing a classical rendition like that, but it's kind of the same thing where I just love hearing, especially, you know, with Queen, the Beatles, and, you know, these bands whose music is so prolific, like, hearing any of these songs in a different kind of genre. It's like, you ever see, what are they called, like, postmodern jukebox on YouTube? Where it's like they take very famous songs and they'll perform them in like a 1910s ragtime style.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah,
or they'll do like a 30s.
I love this.
And like they'll take like, you know, some kind, or they'll even do like, you know, a 50s doo-wop style, or they'll make it like 60s R&B. So, and to me, and it was interesting, I was just listening.
Obscura something.
I know them as, I know the Postmodern Jukebox, like they're the ones that I know, like on YouTube.
But there's another one called Obscura something.
Yeah, and like, it's interesting because I was just listening to this very recent interview with Paul McCartney, because like, of course, the Beatles Get Back thing just came out, which we'll talk about in a bit. But this, he just published a book of like his lyrics, like select lyrics and the stories behind the songs. And of course, my mother, shout out to my mother, Tina, who's definitely listening to this. She got it and it's sitting at her house. I can't wait to go over and look through it with her. And in this interview, it's the CEO of Barnes and Noble, like the bookstore, interviewing Paul McCartney. And he asks him something about like, how do you feel like when people cover your songs and represent them in a new way? And he said it's like the most flattering thing, you know. It's like, can you imagine, like, because I love writing songs, you know, and I've had a couple of people sing songs I've written over the years, and it's just like, ugh, like imagine hearing like 40 different versions of Hey Jude, you know. It's just how, like, in different styles and different.
How many covers do you think we've played on this show? I love covers.
I know you yeah, of course.
One of my favorite is like a ska or reggae rendition of
I was just talking with someone
Beatles
the other day
hit
about
or
shitting off the dock of the bay. Well, I remember when I found that how
but
how
here's
excited you were.
There's one last thing I want to say about the Queen's
She's a killer queen
about that concert. And just to put it to rest, yes, the quartet did perform well under pressure.
I love that you said that and Lick just kind of went, I hope the mic picked that up. Okay, dad joke alert. We got to get like a little thing, like a little dad joke. I'm leaving. I'm done. Fuck off. I'm kidding.
We need, and I just pressed a button.
The fact that you were never like a shock jock, Pat, you could have been the next Howard Stern.
No, that little button I pre-recorded is going to be like our segue alert. But speaking of segues, we've talked about the Beatles. So you did see Get Back on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it. I heard like mixed reviews.
Well,
what's your take?
For someone like myself,
who's a huge fan,
fanatic, I would say. I mean, it's so funny because people always ask me like, "Oh, do you collect Beatles records?" And like, no, I don't. Actually, I'm not a Beatle collector, but I am when it comes to the Beatles music. Like anybody who's a musician or, you know, anyone who loves music. I mean, it's just like, and it took me a while. Like, I was like, it was when I was like 15, I really, really, really got into the Beatles and I started playing guitar. And what was so funny is like, I got into the Beatles, but I had already been into like Motown and R&B. So it's like, I kind of felt like this weird thing where I liked the same music that they did, you know, where it's like where right. they were covering Please Mr. Postman by the Marvelettes and You Really Got a Hold on Me by the Miracles and, you know, like doing Motown songs where I was like already like, oh, I have all those records. These are like the things that I grew up with. So it's like I've always felt this like connection with the Beatles in a sense where it's just like, you know, I hear them do like Some Other Guy, you know, an early track they recorded at the Cavern. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's like Richie Barrett on Atlantic. You know, it's like. So for me, like, for this thing to come, also, I mean, I've seen Paul McCartney in concert more than anyone else. I've seen Paul McCartney 10 times in the last 12 years, and I mean, I would go see him 10 more times. He's the best. He's the best living musician in the world. So with the Get Back thing, I mean, it's long. You know, it's three episodes, like two
eight
and a half.
Hours, I think.
I think each, like, the first one was like 2 hours and 20 minutes, the second one was just 2 hours, and the last one was like two and a half. But just to see, you know, there was always kind of this common misconception about this era of the Beatles where there was a lot of infighting and they weren't really getting along. And like, yeah, there's a bit of bickering, but they were having fun. And like, it's just so cool to see them kind of reminisce. Like they'll randomly just start talking about songs they used to cover in the Hamburg days, like 8 years ago. And like, they'll just start playing like Shake, Rattle and Roll and like... And at one point, they're trying to, like, do the arrangement for Get Back. Like, they're in the middle of writing it. And, of course, it becomes their next single. And big surprise, it's a number one hit. And George Harrison's like, we should have this bit where it just stops and goes, doom, 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 just, like, Reach Out by the Four Tops. And I'm just like, oh, like, I just, like, when they talk about Motown, like, it just reminds me of another thing. Like, in the Beatles anthology, when they first come to New York in 1964, and Murray the K was, like, the... biggest radio DJ in New York City, and he was constantly plugging them and this and that. And George Harrison calls in, and they go like, "What Beatles song do you want us to play?" And George goes, "Oh, can you play Pride and Joy by Marvin Gaye?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah." And then they're like, "You got it, baby. You heard it here, folks. George Harrison wants to hear Motown." It's just like, and in the second episode too, there's one point George walks in and he's holding a couple of albums, and it's three Smokey Robinson records. It's the Make It Happen album, the Smokey Robinson's Greatest Hits, and the Special Occasion album. And I'm just like, oh, these guys like loved Motown. So, you know, to see that is just, yeah, you know, for a Beatle fanatic, if you're just like a fan and like, yeah, you know, it's long, but for someone like me, it's like, I can't wait to watch it again already.
Well, you've heard it here first.
I kind of wish I had some kind of Beatle record to play or why don't we do something? Why don't you play something to start with?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's always,
well,
you know,
we've talked about,
we've been talking for too long. Let's get a record going
about Motown. So this is Soul.
Hey.
It's Northern Soul.
Which is...
It's a big Northern Soul track, not necessarily a well-known.
And this is like a recent addition to the archive of Parkapat.
Absolutely. You know, it's... It...
Do I know this one? Do you think I know this one? Because I know you always surprise me. You find stuff online that I just... I don't know.
So here's my little description.
Okay, I see it's on Challenge.
Right.
The Jerry Fuller Double Life. Is it actually?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I love this song.
So from 1966.
All I had to see was the label.
Incredible.
I love this track.
I describe it as a driving Northern Soul bomb. So I'll hand it out to you.
It's got the do-do-do.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
So how beautiful is that copy?
It's not as beautiful as my Canadian pressing on Apex. Okay, no, it's a gorgeous white label promo. And this is such a perfect example of white guy doing justice to the soul sound. Because Jerry Fuller, so he was over at Challenge Records. And if I'm not mistaken, so that was the label that the Champs were on, like Tequila, you know, mm-hmm. and they did like 80 instrumentals that sounded just like it. So Jerry Fuller was over there. So he was like a staff songwriter, but he put out tons of records.
As the Jerry Fuller Four.
Well, that's the Bobby Fuller Four. That's
Bobby.
That's
Fuller.
That's a different
thing. Okay, I fought the law. That's Bobby Fuller.
That's Bobby Fuller from Texas. Jerry Fuller and the whole Challenge thing being from L.A. So he did a bunch of records in like, you know, 62, 63, very teener stuff. A couple of like, you know, more. It was almost like he just made records that just sounded like whatever was popular at the time. He has another one on Challenge that's kind of falls into the northern category called I Get Carried Away, which is like more of a mid-tempo thing. But this one is just like such a
God phenomenal. Story. Let's
white guy doing a really good northern solo track, Double Life, Jerry Fuller. We could stop the show now. We're not going to hear a better record than that.
It's a bomb.
That is
beautiful copy too.
And it's like I said to you, like, while it was while we were listening to the record, we took the headphones off, and I'm like, can you just imagine playing that to like a packed dance floor?
That's what I'm missing the most.
I found my copy of that on an indigenous native reserve.
Wow.
Of all places. Like halfway between Montreal and Toronto, like kind of just past Kingston in Deseronto. There's a reserve there. And I'll often stop there because the gas is very cheap. And I went out there like 5-6 years ago. And it was one of those situations where I'm the kind of insane person. Someone will contact me about records. And it was like 8 p.m. already. And I'm like, I could be there by 11. And the guy was like, okay. I drove out there. Got there at like 11:30. And the guy just had tons of boxes of unsleeved stuff. And I remember finding this record. And I'm like, oh, Double Life by Jerry Fuller. Why does that ring a bell? Like, you know, I see Jerry Fuller stuff all the time. And then I remember I got in the car and I went and put it on YouTube right away. And I was like, oh my God, it's this song. Like, ugh.
I had no idea it had a Canadian pressing.
Yeah, on Apex. Of course, I have it. Well, you know me. I'm a sucker for my Canadian pressings. And especially with the Challenge label, it's one of those labels where everything was pressed styrene. So to get the Canadian pressing, it's vinyl. And you know how our friends over in the UK They love their Canadian pressings. I guess it's a Commonwealth thing. You know?
Maybe.
But that was an amazing track. Recent find for you, and I can't wait to hear you spin that out.
So, what I'm going to tell you next is sort of a role reversal.
Role reversal.
Because I actually went to dig myself.
Good.
I was contacted to go and see a collection.
See, I always think about the last time you were contacted, and you came back, and you called me like, oh, Ben, are any of these 45s good? Linda Griner on Tamla, and Nolan Chance on Constellation. Remember when you got that collection? that was before we started doing the podcast,
yes,
I think.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, that was insane. So how did this one go?
So I went on the south shore of Montreal.
Sure.
It was in Marieville. And
uh-oh.
I went.
Oh no!
Do you know the collection? Did you go?
Did you, in you Maryville? Was it the collection of Albert Jukebox?
Was it? I don't know. It wasn't a garage. It was a private seller.
Tell me more, and then.
And it was about 1,245s.
Oh, okay. Not the same guy.
So in a garage, and the funny thing is the son bought the collection, picked out a few 70s rock
45s. The son bought the collection from who?
From, I don't know, this other guy.
Okay.
And he was storing it in his father's garage, and the father wanted space for the winter for the cars.
Okay.
And there were boxes, so you can imagine 1,200 or so.
It's not that 40, many. Yeah.
You know, four or five big boxes.
Sure.
And they were stored behind a late 70s, early 80s silver Porsche 911.
Ooh.
So it was kind of weird because I had to like hop over the boxes and I was like leaning against the Porsche.
And how did this person contact you? How did that go?
Through a friend of a friend. And
I still get those all the time, right? Where it's like I get contacted by someone. It's like, oh, I spoke to this person who's this person's cousin who said, like, you know about records, you know? So
yep.
Word of mouth.
Basically, that was it. Right. And before I went, I asked, you know, I'm just so they know it's like early stuff I'm looking for. So I said, like, I'm looking for 50s and 60s stuff.
Yeah. But these people never know they have no idea.
And so out of the 1,200, and the reason they wanted me over was to get rid of them.
Well, yeah. Well,
So yeah. They actually felt bad because I went, listen, I'm going to give you money. Just so I didn't waste your time.
Yeah.
But I left with one record. And hey. I'm going to, it's, you know, rougher side, but I didn't have it. And
you didn't have it?
I didn't have
it. Okay, you didn't have it. Okay.
And the, if you want to listen to it, you can go on YouTube and it's on your channel, Ben.
Big surprise there.
So I'm going to just
it must
hand
be
it
a Quebecois thing.
Hand it to you.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Je suis un playboy by Les Impossibles. That's a good...
It's a rare one.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's like British beat sound, but in French.
Playboy, 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 par la popularité. It's a rare one.
It's not an easy record to find. I think they have they have another one.
You sold me the other one.
The other one's a version of Tommy James and the Shondells' "Say I Am" or something, right?
Right. Dun, yeah, I think so.
Dun, 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 dun. And like Les Révoltés do the same song too.
So les impossibles.
Impossible.
Yeah, right. So it's a play on words. Yeah. So
and you were I remember you were the one who told me about this.
Did I?
Yeah.
So impossible means impossible, but it's in two words. Impo is like
tax.
Well, income tax.
Income tax. Yeah.
And cible is target. So the target of tax targets.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's sort of a cheesy play on
and
words.
It's so you know, obviously I go out and buy records all the time, and it's like I often tell people where it's like, you know, it's only really like 1 in 10 times, you know, 1 in 10 times you'll find something crazy. It's like, do you know how many times I go out and look at stuff and leave with nothing? You know, happens all the time. It takes a lot of work. But
they were super nice. And
But in the other stuff, like there wasn't even like Les Lutins or like Les Sultans, you know, like these kind of records. Nope. That, yeah.
And the guy.
How weird.
The guy knew stuff. So I asked him, what did you pick out of the lot and you kept for yourself? And it wasn't anything exciting, but he knows his stuff. Like he was talking about, you know, he bought a reissue of like a psych album from, you know, a sort of well-known psych album from Quebec by Les Champignons.
Yeah.
You know, the...
sure, yeah, I know that. It's a very memorable album cover, the red and yellow.
Yeah.
The reason when you said Maryville... that kind of sparked my interest. So Maryville, for those listening, it's 20 minutes outside of Montreal.
A bit more.
Yeah. There was a guy who lived out there, kind of this well-known collector in Quebec. His name was Albert Iannone, an Italian guy, but spoke French. And he called himself Albert Jukebox. And this guy had probably the most impressive, like, rockabilly and, like, late 50s rhythm and blues collection ever. And his whole story, and you can even go on YouTube, maybe we'll post the link on the page. There is like a news broadcast from the late 80s, like on Quebec TV about him. He was like a bus driver. He drove like a Greyhound, and he, you know, they show in this broadcast from the late 80s, like he lived at the time in Delson, Quebec, which is also on the South Shore. And he just had this basement just with, like, his racks of 45s and every rare 50s album imaginable. And he ended up living in Maryville. And I remember going over there, I don't know, when I was, like, 19. And he was willing to sell any record any soul record he had just because he didn't care about soul music. And I actually remember that's where I first got a copy of Save My Love for a Rainy Day by the Van Dykes, which I sold you on this show.
Yes.
That he charged me $5 for. But if I would have wanted... So this is how his brain worked. If I would have wanted to buy... For example, there's a very common rockabilly record for the Montreal area by a band called the Deltones, who became the Beaumarks.
Oh.
The Beaumarks.
Clap Your Hands.
Clap Your Hands by the Beaumarks. That was like the first record by...
A million seller.
Like by a Montreal group, and it sold super well in the States. But
my 45 is signed by the members.
There you go. They changed their name from the Deltones to the Beaumarks because of Dick Dale and the Deltones. But their first record is 45 on quality, the Deltones, called Rockin' Blues and Moonlight Party on the other side. That record he thought was worth $1,000.
And?
I don't know, $40. Mint. You know, so he was, and it was so sad. He had severe Parkinson's. And he had all of his records like listed on his computer, and he sold on eBay like for insane prices. And I remember like talking to rockabilly collectors from Europe, like guys who I had met at the Ponderosa Stomp or whatnot, guys that I've dealt with who like knew who he was. And I remember the first time I was over at his house, he wanted to write an email to eBay. So he just like opened like a new message to like another seller thinking that he was messaging eBay. Like eBay was some person with his he was shaking. And I was like, do you want me to do it for you? He's like, no, I got this. And I like sat there for 30 minutes, like watching him. He was an eccentric. And I remember I would go and his wife would make me toast. You know, I would go in the morning and she would make me toast and a coffee. And,
Wait a second. Are you telling me record collectors can be eccentric?
Oh, yeah.
What?
And I'll do a shout out to Albert because he actually passed away last year due to COVID.
What?
Yeah, he, very unfortunate. He died, last year. That's why I figured maybe you were going to see his stuff because his son was trying to sell stuff off. And, like, I never ended up going back, but my pal Nick, who owns Beatnik Records here in Montreal, he had gone back because they'd been dealing together for, 40 years or something. But, he actually passed away. So it's serious, people. You know, wear the mask, get your shot, because, horrible. Anyway. Wow, that got sad. But
It's about time you sell me a record.
Yeah, I did a little digging excursion last week. I bought 15,045s.
So my little 1,200 is nothing.
So I show up at this guy's place. He lives he lived like about an hour and a half past Quebec City, so a good
four and a half hour drive.
Yeah, well, northeast, following the St. Lawrence River. And I get to this guy's place. I told him I would get there for like 8 or 9 in the morning, so like leave my house at 5 a.m. I woke up at 3 and I was like, nah. So drove through like the middle of the night. And the guy, like all the records are in this guy's barn behind his house. And there are 55 milk crates full of 45s. So my first thing I go, there's no way this is all going to fit in my car. So I fit as many as I could. And then what was left, I'm like, you know what? I'll just go through them here, pull out, what I want and just leave them behind. I mean, who cares? What do I need another 20 copies of, what's a very common Quebec record? What's the one Danielle used to joke about?
Bimbo Jet.
Yeah, exactly. And so I load them up into my car. The guy helps me. And the guy is watching me go through the records and he's like astonished. He's just like, how are you doing this so fast? And
I had the same comment when I went to check out it, because when I told him, oh, I'm going to go through them, he went, you have a few hours? It's going to take me 10 minutes.
People are like, I have 1,000 records. I'm like, can I come? And they're like, well, it's going to take you like an hour. I'm like, it's going to take me 7 minutes. Right. So I'm going through, and it's like, the guy claimed they had never been picked over, but I think he got them from someone who might have been a dealer years ago.
Right.
Because I'm going through them and I find a receipt from Encore Records on Sherbrooke Street here in Montreal from like 2010. I'm like, that's weird. Like, but this guy, like, he's like an antique dealer who kind of just ended up with all this stuff. So I'm just going through at this point. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to pull out, the Pierre Perpals and the Les Lutins, the common Quebec records that everyone always wants. And, I kept hoping, I'm like, oh, I hope I find something for myself. So towards the end of, you're getting a little tired. You're going through a couple thousand records. Just sifting through like I'm always doing, boring. And then a 45 falls on my lap and I see the Barry label, Barry Records, Canadian label. I go, oh, that's probably Lucille Starr or something. She was a Canadian singer, did a lot of songs in French. I look at the label and I'm doing it very quickly and I see it's something with the T. I'm like, oh, it's the Traits or something. I flip it over and, oh, it's the Tierras on Barry. I've been looking for this record for 10 years. So I look at the guy and I show him. I'm like,
so they did it on Op Art.
On Op Art. So Op Art is Surprise with Foolish Girl on the B side. Foolish Girl's the A side. B side is Surprise. That's the one. That's the big one that people go nuts for.
Yeah, the Northern Soul track.
It's a huge, huge one. The one on Barry. It's not as desirable, but it's hard to find. I had it once 10 years ago and had sold it to a guy in the UK and I've never seen it again. And at the time I'll see it again. It took me this many years and here I am.
And you never kept a copy for yourself?
No, I had the one and it was, at the time it's like, I just wanted to sell it to get something I knew I would rather DJ. Cause that was like where my mind was at 19 years old was just like, I just wanted the records to play at Mod Club and whatnot. So that was very exciting. And overall, it wasn't the best lot ever. I mean, when you buy that many records, I'm driving home and I had 6 crates up in the front with me and I'm kind of like tucked on my steering wheel with like records falling on me. And of course I made like 2 stops on the way home to buy more records once I already had like 10,000 in the car. I think I have a problem.
I'm supposed to be the addict here.
And
so,
you know,
out of the lot, did you bring something?
So I brought a few. Well, the first one I was so excited I wanted to play for you was Earl Grant, Hide Nor Hair, but apparently
you sold it to me before.
Sold it to you years ago. Forgot about that.
Because he asked me off air, did I sell you this?
Yep. And funny enough, you know, the only other one, because, I mean, of course, obviously I've been selling you records for so long, it's like you have a lot of the stuff that I would come across already, but I did come across this one. It is a French-Canadian record, and I know we featured a bunch of Quebec tracks last episode, but hey, we're in Quebec, so why not? This is, funny enough, so this guy lives so far out past Quebec City, when I pulled this record out, I was like, oh, this is so cool, this is by a band from Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, which is, you know, 30
near Marieville, where I was.
And I say to the guy, I'm like, oh, this is from Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, and he goes, where is that?
What?
And I go, like, really? Like, you live in, but this guy, he was near, like, Rivière-du-Loup. It was, like, way, way, way out there.
Well, Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu is
known. It's on the way to Vermont, too, you know?
Is known for having the biggest.
It's a military base there, right?
Yeah, but it's known for having, I think, the biggest hot air balloon festival in the world.
And, like, I think, like, Lady Gaga performed it in or something.
I think, the biggest hot air balloon festival in the world.
Yeah. And so anyway, it's been going on for 25 years. I'm talking to this like old Quebecois guy and he like hadn't heard of Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu and I was like, oh, okay. Well, you're really from a different part of the province. So this record, funny enough, the copy that I have, this is the second time I've ever seen it. I found in Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, which makes sense because they were from this town. It's a band called Les Musiques-Q-R, Les Musiques. On like their own little private label they put out called Musico, and it's called J'ai peur de toi, so I'm scared of you.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of you.
And I'm afraid of you, I'm scared of you. Yeah, exactly. And I know that a lot of our Quebecois fellow collectors, like Sébastien and Felix, I believe they don't have this one. So it's your lucky day.
And you were talking about, you know, the collector from Marieville that was interviewed by on a TV show.
Yeah.
Our friend Sébastien appeared in our local newspaper.
Last week. That's right. I saw something about that. I never
about,
ended up reading
that article, the return of vinyl and how popular. Well, you know, every time a journalist needs to fill in pages.
Yep.
Oh, let's do an article on
how many times I go to someone's house to buy records and it's like, oh, you know, it's coming back. And it's like, I love like Nick from Beatnik. He's always like, it never went away. Anyhow, let's hear a little music. So this is a very obscure record from 30 minutes down the road in beautiful Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, Quebec. J'ai peur de toi, les musiciens.
Tu sais...
Dans ce que tu as, dans mon âme.
What do you think?
I was just imagining, you know, the Gruesomes being here, Bobby
and John
looking at me with, you know, a perplexed, you know, expression on their faces going, oh, God damn, that was bad.
Yep.
And I have to disagree. This is gold for me.
Because it's just like amateur, like, there's like, I always say there's something like I love about that, you know. It's so it's garage. It's garage music.
Yeah, you can't get more raw than that. And you know, it's I'm Afraid of You.
Yeah. Just the title.
How punk is that?
It kind of reminds me of like Ton Ombre Me Suit by Les Chevelles. My shadow, like your shadow follows me. Like musically it's a bit similar. But it's like, yeah, it's like the essence of it, you know, what they're singing about. Yeah.
Or one of my favorite Quebec records, the lyric goes, passe-moi ta face pour un soir, je veux faire peur aux enfants. So the rough translation is, can I borrow your face
lend
me your face for a night, I want to scare kids.
What's that? What track is that from?
It's a common record.
I'm
sure Sebastian is shouting in the speakers. But this is punk.
Yeah.
It's total
proto-punk. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And like with like the kind of like funky intro, like the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's like, what? Like, you know, it's just like friends like joking around, you know.
He's doing the Woody Woodpecker,
you
know, scream.
Exactly.
I love that stuff.
It's maybe not something you would necessarily spin out to a packed dance floor, but as, you know, a collector of garage records from this area, which both you and I are, it's like, I remember when I first found this and I brought it home, I was like, whoa, like this is special, you know, private pressing, you know, 65. Oh, you can't go wrong.
You know, fuck Adele. You know, fuck Adele.
Whoa. You had like half a beer and you're kind of rowdy.
Play me some musicaire, okay?
I agree. Well, I'm going to play you another one because we've just realized this episode's been going on very long. We've been very chatty. Here's another one.
See, that's American.
This is an American record on the Jewel label from Shreveport, Louisiana. I believe we both have records by these guys, the Carter Brothers. There's one we always kind of see, like do the frog or do the something. Yeah, very common. This is a bit of a tougher one to find. The guy that I used to DJ with at Mess Around, who will remain nameless, he used to play this track a lot. It's called "So Glad She's Mine, She's So Fine" by the Carter Brothers. So a little bit of Southern soul. Well, geographically Southern, but kind of has a Northern thing to it. Ready to hear this one?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's go.
We'll be right back. cussing for a baby. But I'm glad you're mine. Yes, I'm glad you're mine, baby. You know people can talk about me, baby. I'm so glad you're mine. I don't let what people say bother me now. I'm glad you're mine. I'm glad you're mine, baby.
This record is so fine. I'm so glad it's mine.
Nice. It's, you know, I feel like you and I should be drinking beer more during the show. You loosen up, you get all. But I, you know what? Just to say to the folks listening, like, I can just see the look on your face when you start coming to at the end, you know, getting all excited, and I just see like the look. And Pat, it's like Pat just went to church, which he did recently because we talked about it for like 30 minutes in the beginning of the show.
Testify.
So I guess that one sold.
It is. I think it's a Southern soul in every sense of the word,
but it's got the appeal of the Northern. You know, it's just a good soul record. It's a dancer.
But you could tell it's from Louisiana. It's raw. Yeah. It's grittier.
It's got the, you know,
it's mid tempo.
Yeah, but very danceable mid tempo.
Absolutely,
like it's like a good pace. All right, let's get one more
in.
Let's
move it along.
So this one is the only record I had in my box that is somewhat Beatle related.
Oh.
It is by a guy called Harry Nilsson, who I'm sure you might have heard of. He sings that song, "Everybody's Talking at Me, Can't Find a Word to Say." It's like a huge hit in the late 60s. He was very good friends with John Lennon throughout the 70s. In fact, John Lennon produced a bunch of his records. But this is a very, very early record by Harry Nilsson, doing a tune that we are very familiar with called 16 Tons.
This is like a noop-poop-a-doo.
Yeah. It's funny because 16 Tons kind of originated as a very country song, but, you know, it's a minor key kind of funky. Like, it's funny because the original version by Tennessee Ernie Ford, it's like he redid it in the 60s with kind of more of a soul beat to it.
Isn't it, at the core, it's a blues?
Yeah, I think it might be one of those songs that was kind of just like always around, but like the songwriting credit goes to Merle Travis, who's just an old country guy. But yeah, it's like, you know, Eugene Church does a great version on King. James and Bobby Purified do it. Yeah, it's just like one of those tracks that just kind of got done a lot. But this version, I find, kind of stands out. It's a bit different, and it's very mod.
It's all about working in the coal mines, right? And working for...
Yeah, 16 like, tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. And they say, Peter, won't you come? Because I can't go. Oh, my soul to the company store. Yeah, it's...
And that's
almost like a protest song. It's like protesting,
it's
like working for shit wages, doing a difficult job, you know?
But do you know about the company store, what it was all
yes,
about?
Yes, yeah.
So
that's where my name comes from on Discogs, the company sleeve.
Is it? Oh, I never made the connection.
Yeah, that's it.
Because it's, you were being paid by like the coal mine owner in money, like
that
company
you would then
money.
Go spend, yeah.
So you could only spend it at the company
store.
It's
almost like a commissary in prison. You know, it's like it's.
But
yeah.
So the company was making double the money.
That's right.
So it was paying wages, but they had to reinvest it in the company store.
Yeah. So it was a good scam. Anyway, here's a very mod version.
Oh, can't wait.
1965 on the Tower label in its original company sleeve in beautiful condition. Harry Nilsson.
The company sleeve.
60. Oh, yeah. Doing 16 tons.
Well, I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I said I picked up my shovel and I walked. Loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal. And the star boss said, that's my soul. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. Say, Peter, don't you come, because I can't go, because I owe my soul to the company store.
Being an addict, I feel like I sold my soul to the company sleeve.
Ha!
Because,
Nice one, eh?
Yeah, I've never heard this version
before. You know, it's I find most of the versions kind of do follow a very similar chord structure to the original version. This one, with like those little organ breaks and stuff, I mean, with the backing vocals, it's,
It oozes cool.
It oozes cool. Well, anyway, I'm glad I'm 3 for 3 this episode. It's been a long time since I've presented you with a dud.
Yep.
And what are we ending off with today?
Well, we're switching gears again. This is more of a pure Northern Soul sound.
Love it.
It's,
show me the label very quickly so I can guess.
And it's sort of a double-sider. We're going to actually play the B-side.
Okay.
So, okay, I'm going to... just show you the label, and let's see if you can...
just, like, peep it over the little...
partition here.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Neptune Records, so, I don't know, Linda Jones or the OJs. I know it's a Philly label, but I'm not familiar with, like, a big record on this label.
The Vibrations. The Vibrating Vibrations.
Is it the same Vibrations, like the
no,
OK Vibrations?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, okay.
No.
Interesting.
So the A side,
definitely. I don't think I've ever heard of this.
So the A side is sort of a funk, good funk tune.
Yeah, because like that label, I associate more with like late '60s, like very late '60s,
oh,
like early '70s.
This track 71. Is from 1970.
Okay.
And so we're gonna listen to the B side, and it's just a right a surprise party. It's a classic Northern Soul dancer.
Cool.
Because so, the title is, I'll just hand it to you.
Surprise Party for Baby.
Yep.
By the Vibrating Vibrations.
It's catchy, it's infectious, and it's the perfect track to finish off this episode.
Yeah. Well, good way to end, you know, with a little party soul track.
Yeah, to celebrate our 75th
episode. Get ready for that 100th episode down the road. That should be a party and a half. You know, we could be like one of those like 80s sitcoms, and our 100th episode could just be like flashback episode.
We'll figure something out.
Oh, God,
out.
We'll have something up our sleeves. And hopefully maybe we'll do some kind of Christmas-related episode for our next one, something fun. But anyway, thank you for listening. Episode 75, Addicted to the Needle, the podcast Ray Vinyl Addict meets his dealer. You can follow us on Instagram, on Facebook. I am on Instagram, Shulman the Soul Man. And Pat's on all kinds of stuff.
Just find me at Parka Avenue.
There you go. Well, thanks for listening, and we're going to say goodbye with a surprise party for Baby.
And keep on keeping on.
that asked for more. She looking good, I want it understood. My baby, she on.